Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children around the world, it's episode 67. Good work, you guys. This is episode 67 of the Big Planet Comics podcast. My name is Kevin.
I am Nick.
My name is Jared.
And we're here to do the thing that you can listen to on iTunes, on all of your devices. You can go to our Facebook page, where we post things sometimes. We're about to post some polls. We'll talk about that in a second.
Polling.
And check out our Twitter, our Tumblr, which I updated. I put a picture on there.
Of? Something exciting?
I don't know.
Go check it out.
Some old Marvel comic from the 70s is usually what it is.
Back when Marvel was amazing.
And, well, Marvel's amazing this week. We'll talk about that a little bit.
You're spoiling it.
Is that all the things? I think that's all.
There's
the
more.
Things. You can
whatever you want. We'll do it.
Check us out on your iPad.
Pinterest
Mini.
Check us. Yeah, we're not on Pinterest.
We're not on Pinterest.
But
sorry,
kids. You can check us out on LinkedIn. if you ever worked here, you can check us on LinkedIn.
True.
So it's that time. It's getting close to the end of the year. What's going on, you guys?
The year is ending. That's.
It's true. The world,
holidays are ramping up.
The world is ending.
Oh, is that like that, that's like
that's
next
the
week?
Ultimate holiday?
Is that in a couple weeks?
I think so.
May
the 21st, right? Yeah, May 21st.
May
you nailed
21st.
It.
May 21st.
I'm going to take work off for the end of the world. Actually,
are you?
Or aren't we closing?
Because
it's a holiday.
Yeah, we'll close early. Especially 4 days after the end of the world. So what's been going on, you guys?
Shaking and baking.
Remember when we used to come in and we used to think of stuff to talk
lives.
About at the beginning of this podcast?
Oh, I went to New York. There we go.
What'd you do in New York?
I went to Rockefeller Center at night and saw a mini, mini gigantic Christmas holiday themed displays, like, 12-foot wide giant ornaments stacked in the middle of a fountain. I went to the High Line, which is an amazing park that they built 3 years ago on an old abandoned elevated train line that used to supply stuff to the Lower West Side, which is a really cool park now.
Nice.
And I walked around Brooklyn Heights and Queens. And
man, you did all kinds of stuff.
To the MoMA, saw some amazing art. There's a Quay Brothers retrospective, who are like crazy animator dudes.
I love the Quay Brothers.
They're pretty good.
I didn't know they did the Sledgehammer video for Peter Gabriel, which was really my only introduction to the Quay Brothers.
Did you do
before.
The little Otik movie?
No, that was Jan Schwankmeier,
who
was, I believe, studied under the Quay Brothers.
A protege.
Yeah. He's amazing.
And also Tool ripped off the Quay Brothers for their video.
I believe that.
They're awesome. That's cool. So they had like their little models and stuff like that.
Yeah, they had a whole bunch of it. They had all their videos. They had all their commercial work when they literally said they sold their soul. They had a bunch of their films, including their, what was their first one? Crocodile something?
Yeah.
Street of the Crocodiles. They had the entire film plus stuff that had been cut from it, just looping in one of the rooms. And
very cool.
A lot of their animation and all their sculptures and stuff. And we tried to take a four-year-old through this exhibit.
Oh,
which
God.
Nightmares.
Yeah. That is definitely nightmare fuel.
Really wanted to watch every video in there, which was not a good idea. So that was a little awkward.
Yeah, I was watching Dark Crystal the other day with my girlfriend, and she's like, kids watch this?
You're like, kids have been scarred for decades by this film.
This movie gave me nightmares.
Used to be terrifying when we were little kids. Cool.
But I went to the National Pinball Museum.
You did. I was supposed to go, and I didn't
it was
get
so
to
awesome, man. You didn't
I
go.
Really want to go.
Took my girlfriend there for a birthday. Happy birthday, Alina. It's her birthday today.
Happy birthday, Alina.
Happy birthday. On recording day. Nick is here in the studio.
I know.
Celebrating your birthday.
She's working. Anyway, so the National Pinball Museum was incredible. Pay like $15 and play unlimited pinball for 2 hours on like 70 machines.
Ridiculous.
It was so good. They had a machine. They had so many cool ones. They had one that was like an earthquake one where you could set off earthquakes and the whole machine would like shake and stuff.
That's awesome.
There was one that like was like a typhoon thing and it would blow air on you. It was really cool.
Did they have Pub Champion?
No.
Oh, that's my favorite.
Pub Champion?
Yeah. Pub,
sounds terrible.
Pub Champion, you train. There's like a giant boxer guy in the middle and you train to fight him. And one of the things you do, there's like a metal jump rope that goes around and you have to tap your flipper and make your ball jump over it.
That's
what?
Awesome.
What?
Yeah. It's pretty
all
sweet.
Right, that's brilliant.
Yeah, I played Stargate was sweet.
Stargate?
The Avatar.
Like the movie?
Avatar.
The new Avatar one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
The new Avatar.
Oh, Nick was saying we didn't have much news this week, but we can talk about the Avengers pinball machine.
Oh,
true.
All right, let's go to news.
Let's go to news. Let's do it.
This just in, Stern is releasing a Avengers pinball machine.
Yeah, based on the movie, only cost $8,099.
We should get one for the store.
We should get one. We should get two for the store.
We could get one for the store.
Could we? No, I want to raise.
Go out of business and play pinball when we close.
Going out of business and playing pinball sale. So what other news do you have? None of it seems very important.
None of it's very important.
Nothing is irrelevant after that shattering news.
First of all, we wanted to talk about the new Man of Steel poster.
Yeah, Nick wanted to talk about that. This has been a big deal, I guess. We were just talking
there
about. We were like
brief froth on the internet over this.
We were talking about what makes the Big Planet Comics podcast different from other podcasts. I was like, it's that we're not going to talk about the Man of Steel poster. Nick was like, oh, let's talk about the Man of Steel poster.
Got to do it.
Well, I guess you're going to have to describe it.
Yeah,
it's a poster of Superman in handcuffs being escorted down a hallway by Marines, I think.
Or military type
military guys, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty terrible.
I've definitely seen a lot of people on the internet like, oh, why is Superman in handcuffs?
Yeah, I didn't care about that. I was like, he's either
deciding not to kill a bunch of Marines.
Kill a bunch of Marines, or he's depowered, or who cares?
Yeah.
It's just an ugly poster. It's like terribly lit. There's like a weird light coming out of the back.
There is a J.J. Abrams type lens flare on the screen there.
The only thing that's really bright is you can vaguely see a symbol, and that's very dark, and then handcuffs are shiny.
It's just a really boring poster.
Oh, maybe they're made of kryptonite.
Oh. He's weakened.
Because everybody loved when Superman was depowered for the whole entire last movie.
Oh, God. Anyway.
But to contrast that, did you guys see the Star Trek poster that came out this week?
Oh, it was so good.
It's so awesome. It's just like Kirk standing in a giant hole in the side of the Enterprise that's in the shape of like the Star Trek symbol.
What? All right, that's awesome.
It's awesome.
Also, another news thing.
Yes.
It's all movie news.
It's all we got.
I don't even know how to say it. Dane DeHaan.
Sure.
The guy from Chronicle.
Which was actually, I don't know if we, did we talk about Chronicle on here? That was a solid
awesome
superhero movie.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah.
Still haven't seen it, but yes.
It's good. Right, awesome.
He was cast as Harry Osborn in the new Spider-Man movie.
I can see that because that kid in that movie has the potential to be like very sweet and nice, but also like he played
unhinged,
being unhinged and crazy very well as well. So
yeah.
So that's cool.
It was good stuff.
So, yeah. Do I have to give you other news this week?
You have another one?
Yeah, sure.
I do. Karen Berger, near 20-year
editor that one.
Vertigo Comics publishing line, has been fired.
I can't believe
she got fired. She's just retiring.
She left.
She has been let go.
Really?
Was it let go?
Because they're throwing like a retirement party for her.
Next year.
Oh.
And why is she leaving now? Vertigo's basically been shut down over the last year or so.
Yeah, they don't have much left besides the
Fables.
The Fables line, Unwritten, which is coming to an end.
Saucer Country and a few other very small.
Saucer Country, which is probably going to get canceled, even though it's really great. And Sweet Tooth, which has, what, just one issue left?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and all the Vertigo characters have been reintegrated into the mainstream DC superhero universe.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess we should have sort of seen this coming. I mean, I guess we all sort of did see this coming. But
coming.
Yeah.
We didn't know it was going to be that. Yeah.
This September, Vertigo, the new 12.
I mean, Fables is still a fairly popular book,
right?
Yeah,
it's probably one of their strongest in the whole company.
They'll do a Vertigo relaunch.
I don't think so. I feel like they're. I feel like at this point they're struggling for good material in the new 52 so much, and that's why they're folding some of these characters in.
Right.
There is like a new Sandman thing coming out though, right? Which we had talked about before.
Yeah.
I assume that's going to be under.
Oh yeah, and Hellblazer's getting canceled and rebooted as John Constantine or whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's pretty crazy.
We'll see.
Yeah, Vertigo's been some of the best comics of all time, series of all time,
and some of the best creators of all time who've worked in comics came in through Vertigo.
So yeah,
it got big through Vertigo.
And I guess DC doesn't seem to. Well, no, they've done kind of what like Marvel has done with their icon books, where they're like moving some of those guys over into the regular writing, like guys like Brian Azzarello and guys like Jeff Lemire now is writing a ton of stuff. So I don't know, you know, if they'll suffer not having that kind of like proving ground for young guys, you know, even guys like Jason Aaron got started over at Vertigo.
Oh, geez,
he got stolen by Marvel.
Yeah, yep. I mean, Brian Wood worked over there for a while and almost wrote Supergirl.
He tried.
Yeah. So that is probably the biggest piece of news this week.
Yep.
True.
So very weird.
Indeed. But that's it. And we have no viewer mail questions. I got one late today. We'll do that one next time. But you guys we're going to go straight into reviews. This is going to be our shortest podcast of all time. Let's do it.
We love comics, they're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell.
I prefer important books like Louis Riel.
It's time for reviews.
Up first this week, we've got a book we missed, I don't know, maybe a month ago, but it's
couple weeks,
but it was really good.
It was a slow week. We had time to catch up.
It was a slow week with a couple of big exceptions. But this is called August Moon. It's I'd say this is a kid's book, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kids should read it.
Kids of all ages.
Yes.
published by Top Shelf, written by Diana Thung, who is an Australian creator.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Unless she's in some other Sydney, but I assume it's in Australia. And it was really, really good.
So this one is very interesting because it starts off with like just kids playing, like singing silly games, like basically kids playing. And it seems to be a very normal town and then takes a radical shift into utterly strange, fantastical realm when some giant, kind of cute but kind of big monster
rabbit bears.
You can just call them Totoros.
Totoros. Yeah. She does make thanks to Miyazaki for the Totoro creation. So giant Totoros show up, and
one of them immediately gets shot.
Right. So it's like, wow, cool fantasy things. No, people show up and start shooting these Totoro cute giant rabbit bears with silenced weapons and trying to kill them. And one of them does die.
Spoilers.
Yeah.
Page 10.
Yeah, that's page 10. So it very switches up very quickly. But basically, it's this weird town where they have this kind of mystical forest, again, much like Totoro.
It's the town of Calico.
Calico.
Like the cats.
And there's a lot going on in this. So there's a scientist who finds out that they find this weird animal's body, which are these Totoro creatures. So he's called in to figure out what it is, and he brings his daughter along with him. And they stay with his wife's brother. His wife has passed away, so there's a lot of like the daughter dealing with that, and the father, the scientist, dealing with the two,
and with then, the brother dealing with it,
right? Too. And then the brother trying to deal with it, and then like this crazy kind of almost like feral, detached from reality kid who's kind of like leader of the gang of kids, and just is super weird and has like pseudo, I don't know, Scott Pilgrim powers. Like I don't know how to describe him.
He reminds me very much of like one of the like black or white from Tekken.
Yes, okay, that's right. Much better.
Yeah, that's comparison. And I feel like the main two characters are this kid Jaden, and then Fi, who is the daughter of the of the scientist that comes to town, and there are these bad guys that show up.
They look like monkeys. They're humans, but they have like monkey features, and they call them monkeys all the time.
Who did? Oh man, not black and white, but there was it. I want to say it's Matsumoto, but there's another guy who did a 3-book series, and he looked like characters like just on the noses from that some Japanese creator who's. Oh, I can't remember.
I got nothing.
I'm not sure, but definitely a lot of this stuff in here reminded me of Taiyo Matsumoto's art, like little grins and stuff from the characters.
Yeah. It also a little bit. I felt like the layouts and kind of the storytelling reminded me a little bit of Tezuka. I don't know why, but when I was reading it, like some of the things characters said reminded me of something that somebody would say in a Tezuka book.
It definitely seems like manga influence, but not in that way that a lot of things are manga influence.
Where it's like guys and speed lines.
Yeah, exactly. And like sweat drops on people's heads.
Yeah,
and
that's
stuff
what I'm saying.
Like
it seems like Tezuka manga influence.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the biggest influence here is Miyazaki and Studio Ghibli.
Definitely.
Both in like the design of these Totoro type creatures, which they have names, but I can't remember what they are.
But they're just like personal names, not like creature names.
Yeah, they're like bear cats, species. Basically. There's one called Mai and one called Goku.
Yeah, they don't show up a lot. They're more kind of there to.
Oh, they're so hilarious. When
they're
they supposed.
They're more like mysterious than anything else in the book.
Yeah, but like that part is very Tezuka, and also the setting, and like you know, it's this town that's on the edge of this very like it's sort of enchanted forest, you know, there's kind of these guys are coming in, and it seems like they're trying to destroy the forest
or like capture the animal. There's like they're up to no good, and they don't like natural.
There's a lot of different stuff going on. So these kids are investigating this as well as Fi's father, who doesn't believe in magic and things like that, or heaven.
He is hardcore scientist.
He's definitely a hardcore scientist, and it all just kind of escalates and ends in this this really great sort of set piece with a parade going on.
All
the characters together, and a ton of action.
I was about to say
end.
A lot of action.
A ton of action.
Even in the middle, there's some great
scenes.
There's
a lot of emotional payoff. I feel at the end because you know, like. Despite this main story of the boy and the girl trying to protect these like Totoro creatures, the other big part of it is like about the girl's mother dying and dealing with all that. And throughout the book, she's like reading pages from her mom's diary, and she sees like pictures that she took, and that those are like separate pages, which are really cool. Yeah. They're like
right,
painted
yeah, yeah.
and stuff,
yeah.
which is really interesting.
The Polaroids that she sent to her brother.
She does too, yeah.
Yeah, and then you kind of get a lot of, you never see her or anything, but you get a lot of information about her from her brother, from the pictures, and from her husband, and it's pretty interesting, like how each one deals with it differently. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's a book where there's like a strong theme of like family, and you know, like what you need to believe to get through life. And I think it's I thought it was great. I thought it was really interesting. I feel like sometimes books can have these slightly religious themes that they push too hard, but I felt like there was a really good balance of everything.
Yeah, it never got
this.
Preachy or anything.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't like some like how a Doug Ten Naple book can sometimes be or something. I thought it was great. I'm actually glad we read it, because we didn't talk about, but we're going to start putting together our best graphic novels of the list year, and I think that this will be on there
sneaking
somewhere.
On there.
Yeah. So yeah, August Moon. It's a great book. Definitely worth checking
Check
out.
It.
Yeah.
Yep.
Shifting gears, as we are always do, because we're the weirdest comics podcast on the internet.
Because we do it alphabetical.
This is Avengers number one.
These Avengers?
Yeah. This is probably the biggest book of this Marvel Now relaunch, which, of course, we've talked about a good bit. I think everybody kind of gets what it is now, which is just a shuffling of creators and team rosters and, like, the focus of some books, but not a continuity reboot, just so people know that. But this is written by Jonathan Hickman, who has written tons of stuff. Nightly News, Red Mass from Mars.
Manhattan Projects, most recently Fantastic Four
and FF. And art by Jerome Opeña, who drew the best parts of Uncanny X-Force and
made that book.
Like, somehow levels up with Avengers number one
again.
Yeah, he went from a regular Saiyan to Super Saiyan, and now he's like SS3. Like, it's insane.
It's crazy. So I think after I read this, I put it down and I was like, this is like the best first issue I've read, like maybe all year. Like,
after I read this, I didn't put it down. I read it again.
Oh, really?
Well laid out. Like, just the intro is like, it just starts so epic. It's like the creation of the universe.
Yeah.
And then like it cuts all these small scenes of like really big things happening that like Hickman always does a really good job of like having like a million stories going on at once, but juggling them in a way where they don't feel kind of like they overtake the plot. And this felt like a really solid story about Captain America for me.
Yeah.
Like,
which makes sense. I mean, I don't want to give away the end too much, but Captain America is definitely like the through line through this whole book.
Yeah.
He's like the heart and core of the Avengers.
And the thrust of this is that, the Avengers are dealing with bigger and bigger threats. And so Tony Stark and Captain America decide that they just need to be a bigger team. And, right before that happens, they get attacked, or they investigate a threat that ends up being like one of the
bigger
biggest
things,
threats they've ever encountered, and
almost like a Galactus type.
I was about to say
threat.
Like FF flying out and meeting Galactus, and be like, oh crap!
But like if Galactus had like a plan for humanity instead of eating them,
I mean, that's basically the gist of the first issue. There's a lot that happens, but there's not a lot to say about the plot, just because like
you want to read it.
Yeah, the really cool stuff.
One thing that's interesting is the team that he initially puts together in this is the team from the Avengers movie, which I think will appeal to a lot of people. This is definitely a book that you can just jump in and read, like if you haven't been reading any of the Marvel stuff. I feel like some of the other Marvel Now books, like particularly Uncanny Avengers, depend on a lot of knowledge of Avengers versus X-Men and other stuff that has been going on. And I don't feel that way about this book.
And each of the movie characters has like a great introduction, like especially the Hulk when he shows up.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, yes.
Yeah. And it's actually building off of some of the stuff from the movies. I think some of the characterization and stuff. And it's the art is so good.
The action, like his like layouts for action scenes are the best.
Yeah. He transitions really well from like really cinematic widescreen stuff into not really dynamic panel layouts, but like, I don't know, just the storytelling and the art is really well done.
And everything that everybody says has like a weight to it. Everything feels like it means something, and it's like so grandiose, I guess.
I think that's fair. I think this is it's a word that probably gets overused when talking about comics, but this book is epic.
It's the most epic Avengers thing I've ever read. I think it's It's so huge. And then at the end, it even gets bigger. And yeah, I'm like, yep. I can't wait for the next issue. And it's only coming in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I know. Oh, it's good. True. Yeah, it's exciting. Yeah. So this is, I feel like this is a book where I definitely was like nerding out when I was reading it. I was just like, superheroes.
No, but that's the thing. It's like, this is almost more like a science fiction adventure. Like Hickman, he's the sci-fi guy. He's not really the superhero guy. And that's why he's so good on FF. And he really brings it here and really makes it work.
But Marvel also, and you know, DC too, those universes, they definitely have those sci-fi elements built into their universes. Right. And he plays off of that in a really great way.
And he's good at like building a lot of subplots and making them pay off. But there's also a really cool Jonathan Hickman-y thing that I don't know if you guys really noticed, but in the beginning, it's got like this little kind of Jonathan Hickman chart style.
Where they're going to fill in the rest of the
style design. Yeah, where like it's like the core is like an A, and then around it is like these little circles that fan out from it. And like the first page is like Captain America, Iron Man, Hawkeye, Black Widow, Hulk, Thor. And then by the time you get to the end, like a lot of the circles are filled, but a lot of them are not, which is very interesting. And like,
and Iron Man and Cap both have like a second line outside, an extra person on a further string.
Yeah,
and some of like, those rings are like drawn bigger. Like there's going to be someone even super more important in it.
He's definitely coming. He comes from design and like advertising stuff, so he's always great at that stuff. And he loves to put like infographics in his book.
Yeah, he does some really awesome ones in here.
And it's such an awesome one where like I'm looking at it, I'm like what symbol is that for? Like what symbol is that for? Like who's that? Who's this? And then like, who's going to be in these giant, massive symbols that are, like, looming on the horizon? I'm like, ugh.
Enough about the symbols. Avengers is really good.
It's awesome.
Buy it.
It's so awesome. Definitely buy it.
Every aspect.
If you don't buy it, we will probably just stuff it in your bag after you check out. So moving on from that to a book called Blackacre. This is a new Image book that came out this week. This is written by Duffy Boudreau, who I believe was in Guns N' Roses. And
I didn't do any research this week.
Yeah, Nick didn't give me his cheat sheet. With art by Wendell Cavalcanti. These are two guys I've never heard of before.
You know what I loved about this book?
What?
The ad in the back for Change, which looks really good.
Yeah, Change does look really good. So Jared, why don't you tell people what was going on in this book?
All right, so this immediately starts in the year 2202. I don't even know how to say far distant years anymore. 2202. Yes. Well, at first I read it as 2012 or 2022, or so I thought it was like much sooner. But anyway, and it's the world has basically fallen into the, you know, corruption and pollution. Basically, the world's fallen apart, and all the rich people are living in giant enclave protective cities, and everything else is just like Mad Max wilderness. And so it kind of flips between...
Because of pirates and zombies.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
It's an analogy. But we're good with that. There are no actual zombies in this comic. Sadly.
Oh, there are.
There are. They live outside the city walls.
Yeah, see?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
No. There are actual zombies. No, that's his reference to, like, zombies were a thing in culture.
Oh, but they're walking like zombies.
You guys are killing me.
I assumed these people... Look, this the storytelling...
Did you guys read this?
I did. I thought the storytelling in this comic was really muddy, to be honest.
All right. So there's a lecture at the beginning where the guy says that basically everyone was expecting the zombie apocalypse where everyone would suddenly become zombies or there'd be like a sudden disaster. But in fact, it's much more like the rise of piracy where like little bits and corners of the world are falling apart. So his thing is like instead of being prepared for like having a bunker, it's more that we let the world slip into chaos.
Oh, I thought he was saying both of those things happened.
I don't know. The other thing I really liked about this issue is the cover. The cover's really good.
Yeah. So all these people live in this enclave. Continue, Jared.
All right. Let's see if I can do this here. So there's one of the guys who's like one of the security dudes who works on the border, making sure no like barbarians attack the city. And then out in the wilderness, there's groups of people who are religious zealots or survivalist or normal people or whatever. And then there are rich people on the inside. And the main character is one of the guards who is sent on a mission out into the outside world. And there you go.
Yeah, there's also another cool ad for a Ladron Ouroboros hip flask.
It does look really good. Really cool. And there's a really good quote from Brian Wood in the back.
Sweet.
Not about this comic, about something else. Yeah, I don't know. It's just the whole thing was it was just a little bland for me. The universe felt very much like a lot of universes I've seen
before. Like Land of the Dead.
Yeah, or like
crossed with
like Elysium that's coming out, or like what that movie with Scarlett Johansson or with like Justin Timberlake in it or whatever, like Time's Up or whatever.
God, no, it's called. That one.
In Time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I hated the most about this comic?
Go on, Nick.
The introduction. I hate when they can't set up the world through the storytelling.
Yeah,
good point.
They just have this like 8-page thing where this guy's like, "Here's what this world is, and
it's
here's
only
what's happening."
6 pages
in this world, and blah blah. I was like,
"Yeah, hey. I'm not a fan of that." I think a lot of people tend
it's lazy.
They mistake their series bible for storytelling.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's really interesting. I think you can tell that stuff through dialogue, and you know, it's like imagine if you like the first episode of The Wire was like, in Baltimore there are lots of drug dealers, and you know, it's
right,
just like,
right.
It's
yeah.
just it's
ever
just,
since the early 1930s,
yeah, like clips,
crime has been rising,
clips of like people selling crack on the news or something. I don't know. Yeah. It's just like, I don't know. I think you're right. It's just kind of lazy storytelling. And it's not a great first issue.
Yeah, speaking of that, streak is over.
no, that's definitely not true. Image is krill in it right now. But it's just not a great first issue. Up next we have a miniseries, you guys.
Oof, close.
Ooh,
one.
Thank the Lord. This is called Human Bomb. This is a new DC series.
I thought it was called Bomb.
Oh, did you really?
No, I was wishing, because that would be very honest.
This is by Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti.
This is hot off the heels of Phantom Lady.
I will say, you know, Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti, they're kind of all over the place. They do really
We've
good
said
stuff
that
sometimes.
Before.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, the first of these miniseries was The Ray, which was actually pretty good.
Yeah, and then they're still doing All-Star Western, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And then they're doing Human Bomb, which is drawn by Jerry Ordway.
Yep.
Who is, to me, like, very symbolic of what I don't like about a lot of art in DC Comics. He's just he's sort of a journeyman in my eyes.
Yeah,
he does it. He never
does
it.
His art's good.
Yeah, it is good, but it's just not. It doesn't excite.
Yeah, there's nothing different about.
Yeah, Nick, you just read Human Bomb right before we started this podcast.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell people what it's about?
I dare you.
It's about a lot of stuff that I don't care about. Well, it's about. Okay, so this guy.
You mean like the heroes in our national military?
It starts off with this guy having a dream.
It's about leveraging 9/11 for drama in a comic.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, it starts off with this guy having a vision of himself blowing up the White House.
Oh, that was just a vision?
And then he's like, oh, it was all a dream.
Speaking of terrible intros.
He used to read Word Up magazine.
Oh, yeah, and then he sees Salt and Pepper and Heavy D,
yeah.
And they're in a limousine.
Yeah. Well, anyway, and so
that's
he starts having these dreams, and then it cuts to him, and he's in a construction site, and he's talking about... oh, man, it was crazy. I was in the war, and bad stuff happened. It's hard being a blue-collar worker. Well, 9/11 happened or something. I'm not sure what is happening in this, actually.
There's a bombing.
Is this 9/11, or is it just explosions
just
everywhere
explosions.
In New York?
Come on, man. They just rebooted this whole universe a year ago. That's like 10 years
this
ago.
This is not... Okay, so let's get to the main thing in this. So basically, there are a bunch of human bombs all over the world, and they're being like... tracked by this
organization. Oh, is that what's happening? I didn't get that.
Yeah. And they're being tracked by this organization, and I don't know. There's really weird stuff. Like, some of the writing in this makes no... Like, when they're trying to figure out, like, how the first names of all these terrorist organizations spell the word crown or whatever.
Well, yeah, because that's like Cobra Subdivision.
Like, it's just weird stuff that makes no sense. And then, basically, they decide that means that this main character is... like a guy that they all need to go after.
Well, no, because he's the only human bomb that doesn't detonate.
Right, exactly.
And so he's got kind of the power to control the human bombness, I guess.
But you see that he's a human bomb, and he stops another human bomb that was sent to where he was so they could waste a human bomb.
Well, as this one guy
right?
as this one guy says,
am I following
well,
the plot
one of them,
here?
You mean Human Bomb 17 or Human Bomb 33?
as the one character says in this, he's got a bomb. I think he is a bomb.
And the cover says Justice needs a new weapon, so I assume this guy's going to be in Justice League. This was not a great comic. That's all. We're being jerks.
It really makes me look forward to the new Vibe comic that's coming.
True.
There is a picture of LeBron James on the back, who I assume is going to be in the next issue,
probably,
which is called Human Bomb Number 2 NBA on TNT. All right, let's move on, you guys.
Moving right along.
All right, up next, we've got a book I think we were all pretty excited about. This is Legend of Luther Strode, This is the sequel to The Strange Town of Luther Strode, which was, I think, probably for all of us, one of our favorite miniseries of last year.
Indeed.
Yeah. This is written by Justin Jordan, drawn by Trad Moore, and normally don't mention, but coloring by Philippe Sobriero, because the coloring it's in this book is really fantastic. This picks up 5 years after the events of the first Luther Strode.
I think my first question going into this, though, was, are we going to get the Luther Strode... the Luther Strode Justin Jordan or the Team 7 Justin Jordan?
Well, that is a good question, and I think the answer is somewhere in between. So I don't want to talk too much about the plot of this because I don't want to ruin the end of Luther Strode, which is it's almost impossible.
The first one, you mean?
Yeah. So I would say if you haven't read the first Luther Strode, just go ahead and maybe skip past this part, or better yet, just go out and read Strange Tale and Luther Strode because it's a really fantastic.
And then come
book.
Back.
Yeah, it's and then come back.
Amazing.
Yeah. So that was a good book, huh, you guys? And remember at the end where Luther Strode, you thought he died, but then he wasn't dead.
Right.
So this is 5 years later, and basically, if you read the first book, as it was going on, the main character, Luther Strode, you know, he was a kid who basically sent away for, like, a Charles Atlas kit, but became more and more strong, became more and more aggressive as it was going on, and it affected his family, and there were some people hunting him down, and... Where this starts, it seems like he's sort of just become almost completely a monster at this point. Yeah, and he's the Punisher.
He's like a superhuman Punisher.
Yeah, and the art is great. I will say
it's incredible.
It's incredible. The level of violence is still like this very kind of almost like fun, just ridiculousness to it. But I think where this book falls flat. And it's only the first issue, so obviously there's going to be more to it. And I hate to say it, it's just I thought a lot of what made the first Luther Strode great was that emotional hook of his family and
good point,
and like his mother and stuff. And I feel like that is completely missing from this. Basically, he's like a monster that kills villains. So far,
this feels more like Kick-Ass a little bit.
Good point.
Where it's got all this crazy violence and these over the top bad guys and. But nothing really behind it. Like, does Luther Strode even have a line in this? I don't think he does.
I don't think he does. And then, I don't want to spoil it, but basically there's a character that shows up at the end.
So I think that's the thing that, like, issue two with that happening at the end will be the emotional hook of the storyline.
Maybe, but I thought...
Together, but that won't be till issue two.
Yeah, and I also think that character was... the most poorly written character in first volume of Luther Strode and was borderline offensive in their portrayal. So I don't know. Yeah. But I don't know. I love Luther Strode and I'm hoping that this is going to get better and that,
I mean, there's a lot of things to like about it.
There definitely are. I will say like Trad Moore's art is like even better than it was in the first volume.
Right.
It's crazy good.
Oh man.
The violence is so well detailed.
Yeah, but I think all the things so far from this that I enjoy are from the art and not much from the writing. That's all.
Yeah, it's very much like a action oriented issue.
Yeah, I was very let down. So
really?
I think
I'm still fine coasting from the first series. That this is just like I'm going to see where this is going and wasn't bothered by it.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely
I
not.
See how it's not like that as strong a start as the first series, but like. Everyone will have read, hopefully, the first series to read this, because otherwise you'd be like, what the heck? This is definitely not a good jumping on point, kids.
Yeah, I didn't feel super
excited. And so with
excited.
That, I'm fine with it. No.
I didn't feel super excited for the second issue.
Really?
As much as I did for all the other issues of the other series.
I don't always have to, like, if this was, like, a new thing, I would be pleasantly surprised by it. But I feel like coming off of the first Luther Strode, there were characters I cared about in that book.
True.
And there's not a character I care about in this. I don't care about what happens to Luther Strode in this book because he's basically just a monster, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think that the rest of it will probably be like some kind of redemption.
Yeah.
See, that's why I'm coasting. That's what I meant by coasting off the first one. It's like, I want to know why he got to this point. How
is
he like this?
That's one of the problems that it's like, it's not set up. It's not set up. So like it's set up. So it's written for like a trade basically. Like you,
right, like, where you just keep turning the pages and
it's not a very well-written first issue because it doesn't have that, like, stuff, all the stuff in it. It's like, Oh, in a little bit, we'll get to that.
You know
stuff.
What this is? It's like when I've been complaining recently about how a lot of comics start out and they're like 5 years from now, and then they'll jump back and like tell that story. This is like, I bet this series is going to be that, but the whole first issue is like the 5 years from now.
Right.
And then, because obviously with the characters showing up at the end, we're gonna see
something happened.
What happened? Yeah, but overall, I was a little bit disappointed in this issue.
We'll have to talk about issue two.
And you've heard us talk about Luther Strode before. This is not saying it's bad. It's just saying that it wasn't quite as good as I was hoping it was going
to
be.
It's a disappointment to you.
Yeah, it was a disappointment.
Been.
Yeah. Because I expected so much.
I think we have to review issue two now.
Yeah.
I think we probably will. And hopefully we'll be saying something completely different.
Yep.
All right. Just one more comic this week. This was not a big week. There was some good stuff, but not a lot of like original graphic novels or anything like that.
Yeah.
But there was Thunderbolts number one, which is by Danny Way, professional skateboarder Danny Way, and Steve Dillon. Who, you know, Steve Dillon drew Preacher and
he
a bunch
was
of
in,
Punisher.
Something about Mary.
Right, and Entourage. And and Danny Way is the guy that's been writing Deadpool for a long time.
All right, Thunderbolts number one.
Yep.
I think I would liken this comic to The Expendables, I feel.
Ooh,
it's got a lot of action and like kind of, you know, bringing all these like super popular action heroes together. But no, like,
lines
no really, no plot or like emotional hook of any sort.
Yeah, it seems to be like, so basically what this is about, Thunderbolt Ross.
The Thunderbolt.
Bringing together, this has basically nothing to do with the old Thunderbolts, except that these guys are not even villains. It's basically like all the anti-heroes of the Marvel Universe.
They're Thunderbolts team.
Ugh.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. But so these are like, it seems like all the characters who use guns basically in the Marvel Universe will kill people.
Right.
And mostly this is just a series of vignettes of Ross
putting the team together.
And some of the scenarios are like cute.
I think they were interesting. I mean, the thing about this is like it feels like an 80s action movie, like Expendables or something, but I think that's why I liked it. It's not like there's nothing like really good about it, but I loved reading it for some reason.
Yeah.
And like every time something happened, I was like, "Yeah." And then the last panel I thought was pretty awesome.
Sure.
Oh, see, the last panel was pretty bad for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. See,
you just think that was like out of character.
So basically, it's him getting the team together, and then there's like a big action thing right at the end. But I think Steve Dillon, an artist that I like on certain kinds of books, is not very good at drawing action, and it seems really stiff. And
but I think
it also looks like the Punisher's hands are exploding instead of him shooting bullets. But
I feel like that's why I like it. It's like this weird kind of level of like got kind of like bad. But good. I don't know, man. I like that the second to last thing is like you're like, oh man, some stuff's about to go down. Like there's a bunch of guys coming in and like Punisher and Hulk are gonna fight him.
And then
the last panel is just them like killing everybody, but
it's like the most goof troop looking thing. I can definitely see where you're coming from.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty much there with you. It's just like I can't on here like be like, hey, you should get this comic book because Nick and I both think it's dumb and it cracks us up.
It's dumb fun.
If you like Space Punisher,
yeah, there you go. If you like Space Punisher,
I loved Space Punisher. So,
but this doesn't quite reach the levels of Space Punisher.
No.
You have to admit it's still mediocre on some level as well. Like
sort of. I mean, every time somebody's introduced, there's something hilariously over the top going on.
Well, I don't know. Maybe not when Elektra's introduced. It's like, just like
yeah.
Well, yeah,
she's
I mean,
killing
she's,
people.
She's stabbing somebody in their no-no areas.
Their no-no, yeah. Good catch. You're not allowed to say genitals on this show, but you can say no-no area, which is like, just can I say, 100 times more creepy than saying genitals.
Stabbing somebody in their no-no. No-nos.
Oh my God.
I was going to say something far worse.
I was trying
to stop myself.
Yeah, well, thank you. Anyway,
Big Planet Comics podcast, everybody.
Yeah, yeah, that's it for this week. And we'll see you guys next time.
Later.
Yeah.